family. It's nuts, right? Hey, we would never dare tell you how to raise your kids, but Diana Nunes Miser here is a mom who teaches other families to be a little stronger through the magic of something called conscious parenting. I'm your host, Emma Bracon. We're talking about healthy families getting through this crazy holiday season together peacefully and joyfully on Through the Eyes of Women, coming up next on KHSU. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program about the lives and perspectives of women local, national, and international. Diana Nunes Miser has been a doula and parent educator since before she was a mom and wife, with expertise in nonviolent communication and positive discipline. She offers workshops and coaching for parents and families who want to give their families the best chance at functioning in a healthy way. Hi, Diana. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hi, Emma. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Let's start at the beginning. What is conscious parenting?
Well, it was cute. My daughters knew I was coming here today, and my younger one said, Mom, what are you going to say about conscious parenting? I really like it when you say conscious parenting, not perfect parenting. I think it would be good for them to hear that.
Okay, everybody, we just took all the pressure off you, okay? Everyone can exhale and relax as Diana tells you how to raise your kids.
Never. Yeah, I'll get to debunk that myth as we go on. You'll hear about the truth behind conscious parenting. It's the exact opposite about me telling people how to raise their kids. Actually, conscious parenting is really about giving parents a chance to connect with what matters most to them and parent from their own point of power, their own value system. I don't feel like there's one way to parent. Parents are all different. Children are all different. Our parenting needs to reflect our own values. We have a lot of pressure right now in a culture that has a lot to sell us, has a lot to tell us, and parents can get overwhelmed and confused. We have less and less interaction with families, real families, and we end up comparing someone else's external experience on Facebook or on a magazine cover or sitcom to our messy life, and we wonder, what am I doing wrong, or is this what anyone else is experiencing? So the nuclear family is offering a lot of isolation, and conscious parenting is trying to bring people together more.
What are some of the goals that you're trying to help people achieve with conscious parenting?
It started from, originally, I studied to be a home birth midwife and have attended births as a doula, which is 20 years I've been doing that. So I was attending births for about 6 years before I started my own family. And when I had my own children, by that time I had been a career babysitter, the older sibling of two younger sisters, the happy, proud auntie of a niece and a nephew. And I love kids. I love children. And I love humanity, and I felt really excited about raising my children and welcoming our baby into the world. I knew it was challenging. I'd seen that. But when I felt the challenges myself about the parent that I wanted to be and the parent that I was actually able to be moment to moment, I felt like there was a discrepancy there. Like there was a big gap about who I wanted to be with my children and who I was able to be. And I realized, wow, how come no one's talking about this? This is hard. So I really craved creating a dialogue around that just for myself. And with my doula clients, many of them, before I had kids, the relationship lasted far beyond the postpartum period. In fact, I still get to be connected to a lot of those moms and kids who are, you know, teenagers now, because they had questions. They wanted answers. And even though I didn't have the answers, I realized they called because they knew that I was someone neutral who would hear them, and they needed time to just think and speak out loud, and they could really come up with their own, you know, best answers. But a place to connect and talk about some of the struggles and some of the joys and questions around parenting, because none of us know what we're doing.
I was going to say, Diana, the gap between the parent that you want to be and the parent that you can be sounds like a pretty popular song that we hear from a lot of parents. What are some specifics that you hear? What we're trying to do, what we'd like to be, that perfect Facebook, Instagram family, and what we're actually pulling off day to day?
Yeah, well, for me, it's about being able to access as much patience as I wanted to access, to be able to, you know, really be there for my children in a most compassionate way, and really just allow them to be who they are meant to be in the world and support them in that. And sometimes that gets a little bit tricky.
Well, you're making it sound really easy. Oh, of course. All I need to do is be a little more patient, and a little more compassionate. Check, check. Done.
Right. Well, so what I found, so I held the space for lots of mamas to ask me lots of questions throughout their children's babyhood and toddlerhood, and then I ended up having my own kids. And I had so many questions, and I'm a voracious reader and student, and so I did a whole lot of reading. And there's a lot of information on how to raise your kids. If you'd like to be told that, there are many books, millions of pages, that will tell you, you know, espouse the qualities of a certain style or tool or technique. And I felt like those all really fell short somewhere for me. They would be a great idea. My kid would not stay in timeout. I don't know, maybe other people's they do, but but that idea quickly went away. There's lots of tools, tricks, gimmicks. And I felt like as I was moving through those early years that I realized, I kind of had an aha moment at one point where I realized like sometimes the tool would work really well and then sometimes it didn't work at all. And I was wondering, well, what is the difference? Why will sometimes it work really smoothly and sometimes not? And the difference is, there's a couple of reasons. One is if I'm hungry, angry, lonely, tired, we call that halt. Just stop everything if you're any of those things. You know, I say that and I can remember now, I'm thinking back to just 2 days ago where I could have halted and I didn't. You know, you just got to remember if you're any of those things, you just do not pass go. Basically, I realized, okay, there's a process here. It's not just this tool. Actually, when we concentrate on the tool or the technique, we're at a point of least amount of power to affect change for ourselves or for our children. I feel like it needs to come from the inside out. So I created a four-step process, which is the conscious parenting process. So awareness of self, care of self, awareness of child, care of child. And so I wanted parents to have a framework to think about themselves and their interactions with their children from the inside out.
And you're actually suggesting that parents think about themselves and their own care.
I am.
Radical.
I know. It is radical. So I'm working really hard to get self-care on the map. And yet I also feel that sometimes we live in a very indulgent culture, which puts ourselves first. And we don't understand the filial duty that maybe our ancestors would have, that we think in order of priority. So we are an incredibly important priority. Put our own oxygen mask on, take care of ourselves. It's very important. I've made it a cornerstone of my work. But you want to fill your cup up as much as possible so that you're going to be ready, you know, because your child's needs are going to supersede your own sometimes, and you need to rise to what you're called to do.
And at any moment, at any time, your phone could ring right now and you could find out one of your kids is, you know, having a situation where they just need you.
Right. Right, and that's part of what I'm an oldest sibling. My husband says that's why I have this kind of inner sense of duty. But, you know, with my grandparents, my family's a Portuguese immigrant family, and we were close growing up, had a large family. Family's important. At the end of the day, we have a culture that's a little misaligned in its values. We know more about the celebrities, you know, feel more connected sometimes to them or to people who just agree with us, and we separate somewhat. Family is messy. Family is a training ground. It's going to have conflict. It's going to have discomfort. It's going to have hurt places. That's probably the most difficult thing for me as a mom, is realizing, wow, like, if someone would allow me to, if I had the choice, to never say a word that would hurt my child's feelings or do an action that would cause pain, I would take that in a heartbeat, but I don't get that option. You will, as a parent, say or do the wrong thing or be what your child does not need at that moment. And it can be paralyzing. The love that you feel for these children is so, there's nothing you wouldn't do for them, and yet you're almost like, you're bound to fail in some way. And I've come to realize that that's the beauty of it, that that's part of what helps us to grow and helps them to grow. You're supposed to mess up. It's okay to be messy.
You're bound to fail. Who is taking you up on what you have to offer? Who is coming to you for your wisdom and expertise?
Oh, well, right now I'm getting a chance to work with a really broad and wide range of parents, which for a long time I didn't. In my doula practice, I worked with people who were educated enough to know what a doula or midwife was and could pay for our services. So we naturally were dealing with sort of the creme de la creme, the kind of self-selected crowd that actually probably didn't need us as much as some other people did. And that was always a point of frustration, which is one of the reasons why I didn't go into midwifery practice and I stayed in my doula practice to support women in the hospital. I had both of my babies at home and I trained as a home birth midwife, but I knew most moms were going to be in the hospital and I wanted to be where they were and give them all the sweetness of midwifery care. And now I feel like I get to deal with the whole range. We have a big population here who's struggling, and I'm able to work with families that have had their children taken away, that have to have parenting classes, and I'm able to work with a lot of them one-on-one. And then I actually get to develop a parenting program at a local preschool. And so I work with parents and teachers there, and I just did a workshop at the library. I run my own classes and have private clients that really are all along the scale of the parents who are really just trying to get by day to day and have very basic skills, and parents who are really already doing well and just really want the support and access of other parents to hone their skills.
And you referred to self-selection because it sounds like it is a hindrance. If the parents who are already even considering conscious parenting, then they're already doing a whole lot of the work before they've even met you. Is that?
Yeah, that's absolutely the case.
To be clear, Diana, you said this is not about telling people how to raise their kids. And it sounds, I want to make sure that I'm hearing you correctly, so I'm going to throw it back at you. It sounds like what you were offering is not so much a blueprint, rather a how to carve a trail.
Right. I would describe it most as giving parents a chance, a pause in the ruckus and din of this crazy life we're living, to take stock of what really matters to them and what they want for their families. And I help them make that happen for them. So it's helping them kind of rekindle the embers of what they originally, their hopes and dreams and their families. And together we kind of blow on those sparks and make them catch fire again. So life has a way of kind of beating it out of us, our hopes and dreams, our original intentions. And I want parents to have a chance to reconnect with that and live their own best life with their children. And that can be so many different ways. And I truly appreciate all of them.
You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brecon, and we're speaking with Diana Nunes-Meiser about healthy families making it through life and the holidays. Diana, tell us just a little bit about your own family. You've been doing this work since before you had your own family, and now you've got one. So what's the structure? What are they like?
Oh, my gosh. My little family? Well, my husband, Shane, we've been together for almost 20 years. We got together, we were 20. And
by itself, that is a feat.
Yeah, it so. Is. We've really grown up together, and he's my best friend. And we have a sparky marriage. You know, we don't always agree on everything, and especially in the child-rearing area, because as we'll talk about media later, I'm super sensitive and would probably, like, you know, I'd have us still watching Berenstain Bears or something like that, you know, where my husband loves action and...
So you want your daughters, who are how old, watching Berenstain Bears? How old are they? Come on, girls.
Well, Lilia has just turned 14 over the summer. I have a high schooler, a real bona fide teenager, and Josephine's 11. Yeah, so that was kind of an exaggeration or a joke. But yes, one of our contentions is around media. We are really mostly on the same page, but sometimes we have our little... And food, you know, he likes a lot of meat and sweets because, you know, that's...
Because they're delicious, Diana.
I know. And, you know, vegetables.
Diana, what is the conscious parenting approach to media choices for your kids when you're looking at their books, their television, their movies, all the stuff that's infiltrating their little growing brains? Where do you start?
Well,
for instance, do you still rent movies from the library instead of Netflix or Amazon? And why?
Yeah, we do that. I feel really strongly that our children are influenced by what they see and what they hear. And children are kind of little mimics. You know, they kind of mimic what they see and hear. And when they were younger, some of the programming for children, I just thought if I did not want to hear my child speaking that way, I did not let them watch it. I also feel like children, I'm looking at what are they thinking and seeing and believing about themselves and the world and about people when they're watching this thing. And I don't want them deciding that relationships are difficult or, you know, that moms are this way. You know, the stereotypes that end up coming through a lot of the programming. We read a lot. And we listen to a lot of different music, and we do love film. My kids actually, both of my daughters love musical theater and dance, so they love old movies and musicals. Our life is kind of like a musical sometimes, which we joke about as we're, you know, screaming in song to pick up socks and things like that. But our family's pretty theatrical, actually, if you were asking about our family. It's a funny little family we have. It's lovely.
Do you feel any pressure to really model some kind of Instagram perfection because of this line of work that you're in?
Well, I can say a couple things about that. Number one, I consider myself a recovering perfectionist.
Uh-huh.
I think perfectionism is really super damaging for me. It stunts my growth as an individual, and I've come to realize it's not attainable anyway. But with conscious parenting, my approach is to embrace the messiness. When you work at birth, I mean, I've seen every bodily fluid. I've worked with women throughout many hours and days and nights of, you know, the most pain they've been in their life. And this is it. This is life. It's messy. It squeezes us sometimes. It's super challenging. And this is how we grow. And this is how our hearts expand. And why would we want to trade that? I feel like parenting is the most humbling experience of my life. You know, that point of what we want to be able to do and what we actually are able to. I want to embrace that and let my kids see that, well, I need to rewind that. You know, I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. That's not a requirement here. You know, we're in this together. But I am the mom. I do actually feel like that's one area that modern parents need some guidance with, is that we are the leaders, and we can be so in a benevolent and loving way.
Because you're going to be whether you want to or not.
Right. And that was tough for me, too. I think I've shared this story about being bucked off of horses, because the horse wants to know that you're in control. You're on its back. It's got this thing in its mouth. It wants to know whoever's on there. It knows what they're doing. And I've had two experiences where I've ridden horses and gotten bucked off because I'm sort of this, oh, you magical creature. You're so big and beautiful, and who am I to tell you what to do? Just go as you want. Like, that does not work with horses. And when I look at horse people, they're in control of themselves and that animal, and still in a reverent and loving way, but they know they have to lead that horse to keep it safe and to keep them safe. And so that's been something I've had to work with in myself, that sense of leadership.
Because plenty of people view their children as magical creatures who should not be hindered or artificially, reined in. Oh,
right.
My goodness.
Right. And I think that there's value in that. I think that as a parent, obviously, where that really comes into play is you are handed this precious being who is going to develop into something that we don't know. We don't know what that is. And we want them to be able to develop into who they are and to access their unique gifts and potential. And that's super, super important. And there's no reason why we can't do that. Actually, it happens better if we can also have the boundaries that kind of assure them and help them feel safe. It's important.
So one of the reasons I'm glad you're here, Diana, I've been wanting to get your take on blended families, because when I was a kid, Diana, we didn't have language or tools past the Brady Bunch for blending families, and we didn't really have conscious parenting. So one day in my teens, I and the people I now call my brother and sister were informed that we would all be living together as a family effective immediately. So what are some other ways our parents might have approached that, you know, if they'd had some 2016 parenting wisdom?
Oh, my gosh. Well, bless your parents, because you know what? We're all just doing the very best we can.
Mm-hmm.
However it works, you know, Shane and I both come from divorced families, so we lived it ourselves. I think that's probably part of the reason why we've been so intentional about our family. And that's not anything bad about our parents. We love our family. Our moms are both some of our best friends and favorite people, each other's and our own. So, and our dads are no longer with us, but they were too. So Yeah, it's important to have compassion in those situations because they are so hard. Divorce is so challenging, and I do work with a lot of people who are navigating that shift, that challenge. And I think if I just had like a little nugget or one thing to say about blended families, it would be to ease into taking a leadership role for the step parent. That one of the cornerstones of conscious parenting, in my view, is the connection and attachment and discipline and leadership really is born out of a genuine attachment and love, and that needs a chance to grow. So I think that blended families, it just adds a lot of pressure and power struggle to have the step-parent come in with guns blazing or, you know, be in a leadership position right away without gaining the footing of having that connection. And I think it's important to be able to talk about it. I think as families, we need to be able to talk about our feelings, our expectations, or what, you know, pre-talk, what something is going to be like, and to have a framework for where people can air grievances or concerns. And also, we got to share what's working. We sometimes forget about that we put too much focus on what's not working. So I think that's important. But I also think it's important to let kids be kids and to filter some of the information. So, you know, in that way, your parents might have done you a favor. Sometimes today's kids have access to way more information than they need about adult situations. And it's nice to give them the gift of a little shelter from that sometimes and let them answer or ask the questions and lead the way for what they need to know. But yeah, I think families can be beautiful in all different constellations, and we all are doing our best to find our way. And there's so much help out there. There's a lot of great books. There's a lot of, you know, people talking about these things now. That would be my little nugget.
As you know, Diana, we are heading into the holidays. At best, even for the really happy, awesome families, that is a fraught time. Do you have any idea why? And would you like to suggest some common pitfalls that maybe we can avoid with our loved ones?
Yeah, sure.
But why is it so darn hard?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, it's just this ramped up time where there's so much to fit in. There's just a lot happening, right? There's all the kids' performances and there's family obligations and parties, and it's a lot of fun things, but it's also just a lot. And it also disrupts the normal routine, which is both a positive thing and can be challenging for children at the same time. So I just did a workshop on holidays. For our family, how we survive. And sometimes it's a little messy. We have daughters who dance, and we do the whole thing with performances and family in town and lots of friends and celebrations. But we do think about pacing, so calm and active times, kind of sandwiching that in a little bit. So when you know you have a really active time with a late bedtime or lots of things going on, we want to think about having a slower morning if we can, or a time where we can plan a pause in there. And then there's so much commercialism that goes on, so much focus and emphasis on gifts. And
where should we be putting our emphasis? What kinds of traditions should we be really looking to build?
Well, I like to focus on experiences. So I talk a little bit about how our family sits down and discusses what we want to do. It's kind of like a seasonal bucket list. So what do we want to experience? What kind of, you know, music do we want to hear or see? You know, we usually go caroling with friends. We like to make these little orange and clove pomanders. We have a fireplace, and that's kind of the heart of our home this time of year, where we sit around and string popcorn and cranberries and, you know, just simple crafts. They're not expensive. They're super easy and simple, but it's something we can do while we're listening to a story. Yeah, the rhythm of our family. When your kids get older, these seasonal holidays are really a place that gives meaning and kind of a sense of where we are at in the year. We really do as much nature experiences as possible so we can see the changing of the seasons. I suggest families make a little nature table area where they can have just anything they pick up from their walks that, you know, looks like winter. You know, kids love to make little scenes so that we have emphasis on, yeah, experiences, things we're doing together. I think that can be a nice addition to the gifts and the craziness, having some grounding experiences.
Do you have a core philosophy that you use to run your family? Is there a motto, a slogan, a touchstone, a safe word?
That's so funny that you should say that, because in the car, on our car ride, we were thinking about this and we were coming
up. Oh, yes. How was your recent car ride for Thanksgiving, Diana?
Well, our family loves our road trips. We listen to audiobooks, and we also sing our heads off to, like, you know, ABBA and things like that in the car. We have our kind of road trip soundtracks, and our kids love that. But we also, you know, it's a long time in the car. My husband and I had some arguments with the map, involving the map. it was not that pretty, actually. We have messy times, too, but it was mostly it was good. We're four people with now four really different opinions on who wants to listen to what and do what, so it's a lot of negotiating on the road for 8 hours. Yeah, so we were thinking of cheesy slogans, though, if we were to make, like, a coat of arms. I was asking Shane, and his didn't rhyme at all. He just said, the misers are lovers, you know, and the kids thought that was kind of cheesy because it didn't rhyme. And I was thinking, oh, maybe like the misers are risers. You know, we rise to the, like, kind of reach our highest self where we can and do our best. And then the misers are miners. So if we have to go low, we're going to get the gold or we're going to get the gems. We were having some fun coming up with that. But I don't know if we have a philosophy. We just try to connect, have joy, and see the beauty in each other and let each other be who we're meant to be.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Diana. I think we're all going to go home now and think about what our family crest or motto or touchstone is going to be. I know I'll be trying to come up with one for myself. So thanks very much, Diana Nunes Miser, for being on Through the Eyes of Women today.
Thank you so much, Emma.
You have been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Brecon, and I've been speaking with Diana Nunes Miser. For more information about Diana's conscious parenting workshops, classes, and private coaching, visit consciousparentingsolutions.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Jesse Eden, and to our entire production team. You can listen to this show again anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com and join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.